Executives at WorldCom are now the latest to receive a congressional invitation to explain how and why the company misrepresented massive losses. This week, the nation's second largest telecommunications network joined a growing group of companies who were admitting to what appears to be fraudulent accounting practices. Now, WorldCom misstated nearly $4 billion of expenses to suggest higher cash flow. The scandal has shaken investors who've already been discouraged by executive misconduct at Enron, Tyco, Arthur Andersen, and Xerox. And Martha Stewart, who hasn't been accused of nearly the sins of any of the other companies, has her own troubles stemming from allegations of insider trading. Connecting the dots of executive misconduct is the subject of President Bush's radio address this week, and our conversation with our friend from the world of business, Joe Nocera, who's executive editor of Fortune magazine. He joins us from the studios of WFCR in Amherst. Joe, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Joe, this week the chief executive of WorldCom, John Sizemore, wrote a letter to President Bush in which he said, look, I've been just as surprised by what happened at this company as anyone else. Is it possible that the chief executive officer of that company wouldn't know what was going on?
Well, in his case, it is plausible because he's a new CEO. He came in after the ex-CEO Bernie Ebers left, as you may remember. Mm-hmm. He left under a cloud because he had $400 million in outstanding loans from his own company, and it was becoming, as they say, an issue. So the real question is, was Bernie Ebers in a position to know what the CFO was doing? And here, it's hard to say. On the one hand, people who know Ebers say he was completely uninterested in financial details. That just wasn't his thing. He was busy acquiring companies and, you know, being a big shot CEO and so on and so forth. On the other hand, the scale of this is so incredible and so obvious that it's a little hard to believe that the CEO didn't know about it, or for that matter, that the accounting firm didn't know about it. And the accounting firm was, three guesses,
well,
Arthur Andersen.
I think I only need one, as a matter
yeah,
of fact.
Yeah, exactly.
Following the verdict of, I guess, a couple of weeks ago that against Arthur Andersen for their conduct in the Enron case, Arthur Andersen had received a certain amount of sympathetic coverage from people that said that that verdict seemed all out of proportion to what actually the case had been. Do these latest revelations about Arthur Andersen being the auditor for WorldCom tend to confirm a different view of the company? Let me put it that way.
Well, I think that the government went after Arthur Andersen with the force that they did, because in the government's view, this was the third strike. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd already had the waste management scandal. They'd already had the Sunbeam scandal, which were huge. Mm-hmm. And then following that was Enron. And now the WorldCom thing is, I think, worse than any of them, because what is at issue here is a accounting technique that is, it's not like Enron, which has layers of complexity and might even, under some interpretations, be legal. But this is blatant and illegal, and everybody knows it. I mean, they basically try to call operating expenses capital expenses, and it makes a gigantic difference in the way you account for revenue and profit. And how they could have missed this, it's mind-boggling. And what it suggests to me, certainly, is that something was amiss at Andersen at the top, and that whatever the standards were supposed to be for accounting, they just were being overlooked.
Joe, we've got, over the past 10, 15 years, we've had millions of Americans who have become investors in the stock market. Do we understand a little bit better now than we did even a few weeks ago how risky that can be sometimes?
Well, we certainly
I mean,
do.
A lot of Americans were behaving as if the stock market was just another form of a bank account.
That's true. And I think there's a lot of disillusionment among investors, not only here but abroad. You know, foreign investors have been piling into the U.S. stock market during the boom times, and now they're piling back. And on some level, they're sort of saying it just looks like there's a lot of duplicity and dishonesty. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me, as somebody who's been covering this for 20 years, to sort of say the whole thing is bankrupt. And I don't really think that. But there's a lot more of that out there than anybody realized.
And we should note this week that the accounting firm KPMG, that used to be the accountant for Xerox, and Xerox had to recently reevaluate revenue, have denied any wrongdoing.
That's right. And there's another case, Deloitte and Touche, which has always viewed itself as the most pristine of the accounting firms, is the one that got caught in the Adelphia situation, where there's another case of the CEO and his children, his sons, basically self-dealing with company money. So it's pretty darn widespread.
Yeah. I've got to ask, obviously, about Martha Stewart and ImClone. And we ought to explain, we're not talking about near the level of financial loss or allegations of scandal in this case, are we?
Well, it's a pretty sexy case just because it involves a celebrity and insider trading and so on and so forth. But in terms of the systemic problem, it's not on the same scale. On the other hand, you know, if the tabloids have to choose between putting Martha Stewart on page one and Bernie Ebbers, that's not that tough a call.
But Joe, there were a couple of commentators this week in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal who suggest that there's something still sexist about that, that Martha Stewart's stock problems have gotten coverage that's all out of proportion, given the other financial scandals now at which men are at the center. I'm wondering how you feel about that.
You know, it certainly could be, and one ought to not put that possibility out of one's mind. On the other hand, it should be said that the circumstantial evidence that's now on the table, vis-a-vis whether she innocently sold ImClone stock that just so happened to be the day before a crucial FDA ruling that went against the company, or whether she knew she had inside information, the circumstantial evidence is not, at this moment anyway, in her favor.
Is it true Martha Stewart was a stockbroker?
Yes.
At one point in her career?
There are several astonishing things about this case. Mm-hmm. One is that she was a broker early in her career. I mean, my God, if anybody should know what the rules are about insider trading, she ought to know it. The second thing is, I mean, this is a woman who has a $1 billion empire. She sold 4,000 shares for a gain of something like $200,000. And you just have to think, what was she thinking?
Joe, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
Joe Nocera, who's executive editor of Fortune Magazine, speaking with us from the studios of WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts.